නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස නමෝ තස්ස භගවතෝ අරහතෝ සම්මා සම්බුද්දස්ස Dear Dhamma friends, since we have completed Anapanasati Sutta last week, so I thought of taking another sutta which is much relevant to our practice, particularly to our meditation. So this sutta is available again in Majjhima Nikaya, and which is called Chula Sunyata Sutta, the shorter discourse on voidness. So Sunyata is something that we can explore in this sutta, and this is very interesting part, especially as we progress in our vipassana practice. We may be able to recognize these states once we are having some kind of an idea when we are developing it. Now, according to the sutta, so this has happened while Buddha was living in Savatthi, and the same place, Migaramathupasada, the monastery built by Visakha. Probably you can remember Anapanasati Sutta also Buddha preached while at Migaramathupasada. Similarly, this Chula Sunyata Sutta is also recorded while at Migaramathupasada. So at that time, Venerable Ananda approached the Buddha, and he venerated Buddha, and he reminds a particular point that he heard. While Buddha was in Sakyan's village country named Nagaraka, Buddha has mentioned to Venerable Ananda, I often abide in voidness. Now this is the statement Buddha has mentioned to Venerable Ananda while he was in Nagaraka, a city under Sakyans. Now Venerable Ananda reminds this and mentioned to Buddha, Bhante, is it correct that I am recalling it properly, that Bhante was living mostly in whiteness while you were at Nagaraka? So am I telling the correct thing? So Venerable Ananda wants to verify it. And then Buddha mentioned, yes, it is true. And I have lived more in the whiteness, and not only in that time, even now I am mostly associating whiteness. Now the term associating whiteness is also a little bit of problematic, because whiteness is something that is nothing. So then associating whiteness, so we need to understand it is not that we are associating something, rather that is the way the one is dwelling. One's mind is dwelling, or one's mind is kept, and that is basically a kind of an achievement that one may gain through vipassana practice. Now, there is an interesting method or some kind of systematic approach explained in this sutta, how one is attaining sunyata, attaining whiteness. Now, Buddha mentioned that when someone is living in the city or maybe in a village, so there are so many things to bother. Assume that he is a lay person and he has a wife and children, and maybe property, maybe vehicles, maybe servants, maybe his another occupation, maybe neighbors, maybe kings, courts, so many things are there. So all these things actually he has to take care, because if he didn't give enough attention to any of those parts, some part of his life might face some issue. So if he is not putting enough attention to his family, then the family may have some problem. If he is not paying enough attention to his occupation, then he may suffer there. If he is not paying enough attention to the society, then some social problems may come to him. And similarly, we can say even if he is not paying any attention to spirituality, so he may lack in that side. So likewise, when we consider a typical worldly person who is living in a village or city, so there are so many things to take care of, and therefore his mind is fairly occupied. And time to time he is getting various perceptions, various signs about his family, maybe about his wife, about his children, whether his children is doing well, whether his wife is doing well, are there any issues, so are there any money available at home, enough food is available at home, so many things are there. So again, when his mind is considered, so it is again occupied, so many things related to his occupation. So that is obvious. And again, his mind is quite occupied about the neighbors, about the country matters, say political matters, etc., etc. Now his mind, therefore, we can say fully occupied. So it is not mindful, but a mind completely full. Now, when he is coming to a monastery, so this is how Buddha is preparing the logic, building the logic. So assume that he wants to go through a retreat, for example, and he is now visiting a monastery, kind of a remote monastery, we can say. It is in a forest. And when he comes to that monastery, now he has to forget all those, whatever the things that he typically has done, about his family, about his occupation, about his country, about his village, about various other social obligations. So all those things he can actually temporarily, at least, he can keep aside, because now he is in the forest. So in the forest, assume you are in a retreat environment, so there is nothing much to bother about the country, about your typical neighbors, about the political situation, or maybe about your occupation. And you have taken some leave from your family, so at this moment you can't or you should not think about them. Now, if you understand this point, then there is an immense amount of simplicity, immense amount of lightness, relaxation happens in the mind. This is a kind of a comparative analysis we can say. While he is at village or city, there are so many things to take care of. As a result of that, his mind is too much occupied with all those perceptions, signs, various reminders, etc. But now, once he is at the forest, if he is a capable person, then he is able to let go of all those past memories related to his occupation, with his family, his village, etc. Now he is at the forest. Assume that he is at a forest monastery. Now, here, he can now compare. He can do a kind of a comparison, what is not available in the mind and what is available in the mind. So this is a kind of a comparison. And say he is now well aware that he doesn't have any perceptions related to the, say, family. He doesn't have any perceptions related to the country. He doesn't have any perceptions related to his occupation, about his village, about, say, horses, elephants, and those kind of things that in those old days, or nowadays, we can say there is no perception related to the politics and, say, vehicles and all sorts of things. Now, the mind is, in that sense, void of those things. But what is available in the mind? Still, it is not completely void. Rather, there is something still available. So what is that? So those are the issues available in the forest. Now, once you come to a forest monastery, there are certain things that you have to take care. So you have to pay respect to the monks. You have to pay respect to the other, say, practitioners. You have to maintain the code of ethics. And again, say there are animals that you have to be careful of. And there is a kind of a routine that you have to adhere to. And so likewise, there are still some issues available. So with that, so your mind is occupied now. Now you can understand. So my mind is now free from typical ordinary kind of perceptions which I had to have related to my office, related to my occupation, related to the political situation, the country, family, this and that. So now mind is free from those. But still there is something available in the mind. So those are the perceptions pertaining to the monastery. Say pertaining to the retreat in that sense. So this is a kind of a comparison that Buddha mentioned, and it is quite something that we need to pay attention. So comparatively your mind is some fairly free, but still something is available. Now assume that your mind is 100% in the capacity while you are at the city, but now say about 50% you can drop, and still some 50% is available. So that 50% is perceptions pertaining to the forest and the, say, fellow practitioners, code of ethics, maybe about the food, etc. Now then Buddha further explained, without thinking about the forest, without thinking about other co-practitioners, without thinking about so many other things available in the forest, how about paying attention to the posture? And here immediately has come to the earth, the perception of earth, but we can even say we can simply come to the body. That is where the Kayanupassana begins. Now, if one is able to pay attention to the body, as much as he developed that skill, then his fair amount of attention is concentrated throughout the body. So his mind is now associated in the body. So in that sense, now you can do a kind of a comparison. So what is not available in the mind? What is void in the mind? So now whatever things related to the monastery, most of them have gone. They have disappeared. Say about the monkeys, about the serpents, you are not thinking. And about other fellow practitioners, maybe you are not thinking. And maybe about food, you are not thinking. Maybe about your new lodging place, you are not thinking. So likewise, so you have to be very wise in order to drop all those thoughts and to take your attention back to the body. Now this is very interesting point, because this is our entry point to the meditation. So we should definitely have be skillful to do this, to drop all these perceptions related to the monastery, but only to have perceptions related to our body. Now he is no, now only a very little amount of perceptions are available, which are also related to the body, and all the everything else has dropped. Now Buddha further mentioned, now once you are pay attention to the body, assume that you are in the postures, that is what I mean is Iriyapata Bhavana, the meditation related to the postures. As much as possible, mind is kept in the posture. While walking, you are keeping your attention in that walking posture. While sitting, you are keeping your attention at the sitting posture. While lying down, you are keeping your attention on lying down. And while standing, you are keeping your attention on standing. So as much as possible, body being used as an anchor to the mind, so that mind is not being distracted. Rather, mind can stay a little still by means of this meditation, we can say, by means of this association with the body, Kayanupassana. Now, while you are practicing like this, now there may be various sensations available in the body, and you may even notice them. And Buddha has as an example has given the earth element. Now assume that you did little bit of Anapanasati, maybe even rising and falling, so that you are able to improve your mindfulness. So once mindfulness has established, so the next point, and according to this sutta, is to pay attention to elements. So now you have four elements, And rather than completely pervading your mind onto the whole body, now you are trying to simplify your attention just to recognize four elements: earth element, water element, fire element, and wind element. Now they actually show different characteristics. Say earth element, it will be recognized as heaviness, lightness, roughness, smoothness, and maybe hardness and softness. Now there are six characteristics. And water element, on the other hand, it has the fluidity and cohesion. Then fire element, it may be either hot or cold. Then wind element, from its movement. Now these are the characteristics that you can recognize from the body. Now body consists purely on these four elements, but you can recognize very primary level, fundamental level element characteristics when you are paying attention to that elements. Now while you are paying attention to these four elements, now you can see, now typical that boundary of the body may have disappeared, and your mind is so occupied about the body previously as a result of the postures, practice of postures, but now that attention being refined. So it is not the kind of a solid body you are trying to pay attention, rather it consists of various element characteristics. Now your practice has in a way has fairly refined. You are able to recognize different characteristics of elements by letting go of all those different kinds of perceptions, concepts, memories, daydreaming, etc., etc., and you are able to drop them, and now only the mind has an idea about four elements. Actually, this is not something difficult to achieve for a skillful meditator, and there are many people who are able to do it. So they are doing some systematic training and they reach this what you call Dhatu Manasikara, elements meditation, and at that time he know there is nothing called kind of a solid body, or there is nothing called as my body, rather there is four elements and they are manifesting in many different ways, and you can be aware of that. So that's all. So now you can see some more gross perceptions have dropped, and mind has simplified its perceptions only to four elements, or the characteristics of four elements. And therefore, the practitioner knows his mind is empty or void of all those rough kinds of perceptions. Say, related to the country, he has no perceptions. Related to his family, no perceptions. Related to politics, no perceptions. Related to his, say, city life, village life, no perception. About his vehicles, no perceptions. About his family, no perceptions. And then when he come to monastery, perceptions related to the monastery is also have now gone. About other practitioners, no perceptions. And about food, no perceptions. About the climate, no perceptions. So likewise, he is able to drop those perceptions. And then he was available or aware of the postures, and he has some posture-related perceptions, and now those also are absent. And therefore we can say there are fair amount of perceptions now he was able to subside. In that sense, it is free or empty of all those perceptions. But still some perception is available. What is that? That is the perceptions related to the four elements. It's a very fundamental level perception, and one can recognize that. Now you can see how Buddha presents it, actually give a kind of a comparative perspective. The sunyata is not something absolute, but something comparative. And when he is coming to the next level, now one can only pay attention to earth element, for example. Either fire element or all the other elements are there. But he may select something predominant. So assume now earth element is prominent. Now he let go of all the other three elements. And now his attention is fairly dropped or fairly focused onto earth element. And this is also happening. This is also not very rare thing. There are many yogis report that they only know earth element at the moment. Say hardness, softness, smoothness, roughness, heaviness, lightness. So these are the only characteristics he is aware of. And mind quickly recognizes those characteristics. And everything else is not active in a way. They're all gone. Now if we come back to again the analysis, comparison, we can say all sorts of many perceptions were gone, dropped, but only a little perception is available. That is the perception about the earth, about the earth element. Now, assume he is now further developing the Arupa Jhana. Now this is how the Sutta evolves. Now perceptions related to the earth is something material. So in order to remove the perceptions pertaining to the materiality or Rupa, so now someone, maybe if the person is practicing Jhana, and he can now even reach Arupa Jhana. Actually, the first four jhanas are material jhana or rupa jhana, and later one can practice arupa jhana, and which is not rupa, it is arupa, non-material. Now, when one is able to dwell in akasananchayatana, or the what you call this infinite space, perception of the base of infinite space, is the first jhana of arupa, immaterial jhana. Now, according to the sutta, now he can actually compare what he has dropped or what his mind is free from, void from. So, all the perceptions related to the city, all the perceptions related to the monastery, all the perceptions related to the gross body, all the perceptions related to four elements, and previously assumed that he had perceptions related to the earth element or whatever the single element, and all those gone. Now mind is empty of all these different kinds of perceptions. But still, very subtle perception is available. What is that? So that is the perceptions pertain to the base of infinite space, akasa nanchayatana. So, base of infinite space produce some kind of a very subtle perception. So, the mind is occupied with that perception. But, fair amount of other perceptions have gone. All were subsided. All were dropped. So, similarly, Buddha continued the explanation, discourse, going to the other higher what you call the Arupa Jhanas as well. So when one reaches the second Arupa Jhana, Vijnananchayatana, that is the, infinite consciousness, then Buddha mentioned that the perceptions of the infinite space is absent. It is not there. But still something is available. So that is the perceptions of the infinite consciousness. When one reaches the next one, perception of the base of nothingness, there Buddha mentioned, so even the perceptions of infinite space is not there, infinite consciousness is not there, but what is available now is the perception of the base of nothingness, akinchanyayatana. Now he further refined, telling that he may reach neva sanyana, sanyayatana, the last arupa jhana, and when he is there, he is able to understand now mind is free from all sorts of matter related or materiality related perceptions, and again it is free from arupa jhana, which are infinite space, infinite consciousness and nothingness, and that those are also absent, but still very very subtle perception is available. So that is the perception of neva sanyana sanyayatana. So this is something called base of neither perception nor non-perception. So very volatile situation where neither perception nor non-perceptions. So this is a very subtle level one may reach. Now, he now go to another level. He drops even this perception and he takes the mind to signless concentration. Now, signless concentration is something actually typically produced through vipassana practice. Suppose that you are doing or you are practicing dhatu manasikara, elements meditation. So at that time you are able to recognize earth element through its characteristics. You are able to recognize water element through its characteristics. You are able to recognize fire element through its characteristics. And you are able to recognize wind element through its characteristics. Now characteristics show that they are there, or the different elements are there. Now you are quite capable of doing that, and your mind is well established in these different types of elements. You can distinctly recognize them. Suppose now you are quite capable of dhatu manasikara, and as you are continuing your practice, so you are able to understand all these different elements. You distinctly recognize these elements, and that itself is a good achievement, because now you have dropped the perception about a person. Now typically we have the perception of person. So I am meditating, I am so and so, I am a man, I am a woman, I am in this country, I am in that country. So there are so many perceptions pertaining to I. Now that also has fairly broken or fairly diluted, because one will understand this body cannot be considered as I, rather it is a mere manifestation of four elements. And not only that, he may even recognize the outside with respect to inference, that even the outside, all the physical world, all the materiality is nothing but four elements. So these actually are quite strong insights, we can say. So your typical ordinary kind of perceptions are now completely changed to something where you understand, okay, whole physical world, even the whole universe is nothing but four elements. So your understanding is fairly refined and fairly simplified. So that makes the mind quite open and again less burdened. All the different colorful perceptions actually occupy the mind, and it becomes ultimately a huge burden to the mind. But now you have a very very refined perception, that is the perceptions related to the four elements, and it is quite smooth and quite lighter. So you feel lighter, and the framework of the body or the boundary of the body also has dropped. So you can't recognize where exactly your hand is, where exactly your head is. So all those typical conventional parts are also dropped. So whenever you pay attention to the body, what you know is nothing but four elements. So if one can reach this stage, so that's a very good achievement, where you lose the perception of a person, a solid entity. So sometimes we call it as gana vinibhoga. So you have transcended the solidity. Gana sanya, solidity has transcended. Compactness view has gone. Now, while you are practicing like this, then later, this practice may further evolve to the level of understanding common characteristics of four elements. Now, previously you understood distinct characteristics of four elements. So, how distinctly you can recognize earth element? How distinctly you can recognize water element? How distinctly you can recognize fire element? And how distinctly you can recognize wind element? So, you are quite familiar with them now and you are able to recognize it. But when you are continuing your practice, so this understanding further evolve and you notice that all of them behave in the same pattern. They have the nature to arise, they have the nature to pass away. And they are not quite solid, huge entities, but very, very subtle processes. They are merely not matter. They are not solid. They are not particles. But they are very much like waves, energies, where they are kind of processes. They simply arise and pass away, arise and pass away, arise and pass away. Now, this is common to everyone. Earth element, water element, fire element, wind element. Every element show these common characteristics. Now the practitioner, if he is able to notice this, there's a fair amount of insight knowledge is going to arise in his mind, and particularly the Udayabhya Jnana, the knowledge related to arising and passing away. Now, if one's attention is very sharp, he may be able to understand this process fairly precisely, and he may understand so speed. And it's very rapid. Rapid dissolution is happening. Now, when rapid dissolution happens, so there may be a situation that mind can't perceive this rapid dissolution. So previously, you are able to somewhat understand it, but now it is so rapid. So mind is fairly become dispassionate, and ultimately, mind can't take any sign. Because it is so rapid, and again the entities are so subtle, they are not really solid particles, rather they are processes. So they are not making kind of a sign in the mind. They are not making any stain in the mind. So mind becomes signless because of the rapidity, because of the impermanent nature. So, the yogi has clearly understood the impermanent nature. It is extremely impermanent. It's very, very rapid. So, rapid dissolution happens. So, it is difficult to understand any kind of a color, any kind of a shape, any kind of a particle. One cannot understand. Because it is so rapid, it is very much like a flux. And ultimately, mind become fairly dispassionate about it and drop all the signs, marks pertaining to this whole world, including these matters, including these elements. Now, one has reached the, what you call the emptiness, what you call the voidness. Now, here actually mainly the signless. So the signless concentration is something one reach particularly by understanding the impermanence. So as you probably have heard, if one understands prominently about the suffering, he may reach the second one, non-desire, or what you call appanihita samadhi, the desireless concentration. And if he have understood the absence of self, then one may understand the voidness, or what you call the sunyata, emptiness. Now here Buddha has focused on the signless. So particularly by understanding impermanence, one may reach signless concentration. Actually, irrespective of the name given, so ultimate result is very much similar. Because whatever the approach that one has taken, ultimately the result is the freedom of the mind. Mind has free from all kinds of perceptions. So far we had kind of a perception. So even at the material jhana level, there is a perception. Even at the arupa jhana level, there is a perception. Probably you can remember. Say, while you are at infinite space, that what you call the boundless jhana, the very first arupa jhana, still something is there. Still a very subtle perception is available in the mind. Even after you are at the second arupa jhana, still some perception is there. While you are at third, still some perception is there. And while at fourth, still some perception is there. But when one reaches nothingness, so logically you need to understand, okay, there can't be any perception. There can't be any sign. There can't be any marks, stains in the mind if one has purely achieved that signless concentration. Now, this may not happen immediately. So at the beginning, even if your mind drop all the different perceptions related to the city, village, monastery, body, four elements, one element. So likewise, if he is able to drop all these things, still some kind of a feeling, some sort of a subtle perception, maybe a little bit of activation of the mind, mental formation still may be available. But slowly, you are maximizing being in the signless concentration, so it will slowly drop all those available components, available objects, so that mind become more and more refined, more and more pure, and has nothing basically. So this is a kind of an achievement in one's vipassana practice. So that is a kind of a, one can say, a life-changing situation. Because so far mind was fully occupied, at least even with a refined perception, but now mind has reached its home position where nothing is available. Simply awareness may be available. And here, interestingly, Buddha points out, he understands that the perceptions pertaining to the village, city, monastery, other, say, human beings, other, say, body parts, four elements, all are not present. But still, something is present. What is that? So that is the perception, so that is the kind of an awareness of the existence. So this body exists. This mind also exists. So there's a little friction coming because of this existence. So you are not dead. The emptiness does not mean that you are dead. And again, it is an emptiness comparatively, not absolute emptiness. Rather, he may understand, now my mind is free from villages, monastery, other people, my body, etc., etc. Now I am free. All those perceptions are gone, erased. But now still a subtle perception is available. That is because of this living. That is because of this existence. So you can see, kind of a comparatively, Buddha mentioned this. And here Buddha mentioned, there is present only this amount of disturbance, namely that connected with the six bases that are dependent on this body and conditioned by life. So some kind of a friction is available. So you can't have complete absolute kind of voidness. So the mind is fairly clean, fairly pure, fairly empty. Still, time to time, there may be a little friction coming from the body, and basically because of all six sense bases, because you are alive, this body is alive. So therefore, some little perceptions are available. So the user, the practitioner is quite aware of it. He don't bother about it. He don't complain about it. He don't expect absolute whiteness. Rather, he understands now all gross perceptions are gone. I can't kill the body. So simply some amount of perceptions are there. Kind of a friction is available because of this life faculty. That's it. That's all. And now, he can't stop there, by the way. So that is an interesting area now we reach. Actually, that is the last part of the sutta and one important part in a way. Now, while being on the signless concentration, now he has to turn his attention further onto the eradication of taints, eradication of asavas. Now, how to do that? Now, here he understands even this signless concentration I am maintaining with effort. So you can remember the history of your practice, how you have reached this state, even in this present sitting session. So you have done some kind of systematic practice and assume that at the level of 45 minutes you are able to reach signless concentration. So now you are maintaining signless concentration, and there is a kind of effort maintained, effort required. Now this effort is conditioned. So you are conditionally maintaining this signless concentration. So therefore Buddha mentioned whatever condition is impermanent, is suffering, is non-self. This signless concentration of mind is conditioned and volitionally produced. Whatever is conditioned and volitionally produced is impermanent, subject to cessation. So you can see even the concentration of voidness is impermanent. Concentration of signless is impermanent because you are maintaining it. You are doing something to maintain it. So once you stop that doing part, once you stop making that effort, then you lose signless concentration. So therefore, this is something that we need to understand. So rather than we attach to signless concentration, you understand its conditioned nature. And therefore, you are not grasping it. You are not kind of fatuated about it. You are not kind of too much attached to it. Of course, you need to achieve it, but now you should not attach to it. Now, as you understand its impermanent nature, that indicates that you are loosening your concentration, so that you have no any attachment. But an interesting thing happens. So once you loosen the concentration, new perceptions can arise in the mind. Now these perceptions you are distinctly recognize. Some perceptions are related to the sensual desires. Say you are remembering your office. You are remembering your wife, you are remembering your children, you are remembering your husband, you are remembering your vehicle. All sorts of material, all sorts of sensuality related perceptions may start to come. And you understand, okay, there is still taint available, that's why all these signs again appear. Not everything appear at the same time. Time to time different signs appear because you have some taint, you have an influx with respect to those sensuality. Now at this point, if one is able to understand that and drop that, not to feed it, not to promote it, then that desire may dissolve, that desire may vary, that desire may start to weaken, because you understand the mind was quite void, mind was very pure, mind was very clean. But when I am loosening my concentration, again different perceptions related to the sensuality appear. So what I need to do now is to lose that desire, that attachment. So as you do that, those perceptions related to the sensuality start to disappear. Again mind become pure, again mind become clean. So when you are doing it again and again, what happens? Now again assume that you are loosening the mind, loosening the concentration. Again some sort of a sensuous perception, sensuous sign may appear. Say you are getting a little bit of a perception related to your car, for example. And you understand, okay, there is an attachment, there is a desire, there is a kind of a liking in the mind. That is why again this perception has come, appeared in the mind. So now you let go of that desire, and as a result of that, that sign, the sign of a car, for example, also has gone. So likewise, when you are doing again and again, you can understand. So the desires pertaining to the sensuality start to weaken. So this is one area. The other area is the influx related to what you call becoming. Bhava tanha, over here it's the bhavasava. So always we want to become someone. We are not satisfied at the moment, not contented with the moment, but we want to become something else. We want to become someone else. At this moment I am feeling, say, cold, so let me change the temperature so that I feel comfortable. At the moment I am a person working at office, assume at a clerical level, but I want to become an executive. At the moment I am an educated only at one level, but I want to have some higher education. I have achieved first jhana, but I want to achieve second jhana. Now all sorts of this kind of becoming is rooted in bhava tanha, rooted in desire to become. So because of this kind of a desire, we constantly take different kinds of perceptions, maybe related to future events. What I am going to do next? What would be my next life? And what is the next item? So likewise, there are so many perceptions coming to the mind because of this bhavasava. So if one understands that, he may be able to drop that as well. With that, the weakening of this bhavasava going to happen. Now there are another asava, the third one, available, that is called the ignorance, avijjasava. Now how that happens? Now assume that you are trying to keep your mind empty, but you remember someone, say your loved one, or a person who is that you hate, or something material. So all sorts of things actually come to the mind because there is a inherent ignorance is also available. Because you presume there is a person, you presume that there is something. So because of ignorance, because of craving, we make something. Because of ignorance, because of craving, we make someone. So inherent ignorance is also available. Whenever you get some sort of a perceptions related to the person, how about understanding that there is no person there? It is merely, say, 5 aggregates. It's merely 4 elements. It's merely kind of a perceptions appeared in the mind. Say, for example, kind of an image of the loved one appear in the mind. One sense we can say it is because of the kamasava. But on the other hand, we can say whenever we are attributing a personality into it, that is because of our ignorance. What appeared in the mind is simply a mental object, mental image. But we didn't stop there. Because of our ignorance, we have attributed a person into it. So this is an indication of presence of ignorance. So likewise, so we have to do some sort of a disentanglement or unentanglement onto this process. So Buddha mentioned, so when one is continuing like this, so the taint of ignorance also going to disappear. Now, whenever mind is simply relaxed, no perception, no image, no friction, quiet spaces. So then Buddha mentioned that one may understand his mind is free from kamasava, influx happens because of the sensuality. His mind is free from bhavasava, that is the desire to become, the influx pertaining to the existence, and free from ignorance, avijjasava. So at that time, Buddha mentioned, at least for a temporary time, that operation of the asavas are subsided. So if we are able to do this again and again, so more and more, the taints become weaker, and ultimately we may be able to achieve full enlightenment according to this sutta. Now, Buddha mentioned, Dasananda, this is the genuine, undistorted, pure descent into voidness, supreme and unsurpassed. So that is the last one. So that one can say the achievement of full enlightenment. Because the root causes of various perceptions happening in the mind are uprooted. Different perceptions, signs appear in the mind because of the influxes, and those roots, those influxes are now all uprooted. As a result of that, now one has achieved the supreme kind of whiteness. So Buddha mentioned, thus Ananda, this is the genuine, undistorted, pure descent into voidness, supreme and unsurpassed. So this is the maxim in a way. And Buddha mentioned at last, Ananda, whatever recluses and Brahmins in the past entered upon and abided in pure, supreme, unsurpassed voidness, all entered upon and abided in this same pure, supreme, unsurpassed voidness. So, whoever in the past, the best people who have experienced, this is the one they have experienced. And whoever in the future going to experience the best experience, so this is the experience that they are going to experience. In a way, Buddha compare that there can't be any further refinement, and this is the maximum. So, therefore Buddha ultimately mentioned, therefore Ananda, you should train thus. We will enter upon and abide in pure, supreme, unsurpassed whiteness. So this is a kind of an invitation Buddha makes, and he mentioned or explained the path, and ultimately Buddha encouraged, okay, you should train yourself to achieve this kind of a pure, supreme, unsurpassed oneness. So with that, actually the Chula Sunyata Sutta ends, and with that I like to conclude today's Sutta teaching session, and now I like to open the session for questions.
So for anyone that's joining us for the first time, you may ask questions by raising your hand, or you can also send them through the chat. Rakita, I'd like to invite you to ask the first question. Thank you again for taking me here.
Yes, yes.
Now, my question isn't purely based on my experience.
Mm-hmm.
It is to be sure that first that my understanding is correct, and then sort of nowhere near this, but a little bit of my experience.
Mm-hmm.
The first question, I want to see if I have understood this correct. So long as I am on Kayam Pasi Vilavati, that is, I'm using Anapanasati, and I'm with the breath, and I am able to feel the elements, right?
Mm-hmm.
I'm able to feel the elements either a lot, usually the breath being cold or hot or dry or moist,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
I can feel the sensation of touch. And I am sometimes with dhatu, meaning the vibrations or whatever. Then the mind that I'm working with is the mind that is created in the body. Now, we know that from the teachings of the Buddha, the mind can be created in any of the six sense bases. The citta can be created in any of the six bases. So long as I'm doing kaya nipassana and I'm with the dhatu, is it correct if I say that I'm working with the mind created in the body? At least for that moment.
Yes.
Now,
yes.
Vacillate. In the sense, yes, I will be there, I will feel that. Then I will go from there to the breath, from the vibrations to the breath, and then maybe a thought will come. But so long as I'm there, will it be correct then for me to say the perceptions that are arising here have to be perceptions of the body? Because if I am only working with the mind created in the body, then the perceptions that arise at that moment, that time, have to be perceptions in relation to the body.
Yes, yes.
So that is correct, right? What am I understanding?
Yes,
is correct.
Yes.
Now, if I am like that, so now I am like that sometimes, but I'm not like that all the time. I start oscillating, like I said, or vacillating, or whatever the word, I start moving. My mind starts moving, and then I'm Or it's not that my mind starts moving. It's just that the vibrations or that feeling of the dhatu may disappear for some time, right? Okay, now, if I remain with nothing, I tend to fall asleep. So I will then go back and attach to the sensation of breath so that I don't feel this thing that I'm falling asleep, right? But sometimes what happens then is I go and attach to the mind created in the faculty of the mind, because I can now see that the perceptions that are arising or the thoughts that are arising are no longer from the body. So what I feel from my experience, I'm moving between, I'm starting with Kayanupassana and I'm trying to remain in Kayanupassana. That is, with the mind that arises in the body, but because my mindfulness is weak at times, when that kind of disappears for whatever reason, I can't feel it or it's very, very subtle, I automatically feel as if I'm going to the mind arising in the faculty of the mind, because now the thoughts and the perceptions are not something that is arising from the body. It is old ones that have arisen from the faculty of the mind. Does this make sense what I'm saying?
Actually, we can't simply say the mind. So actually we can say there are other bases.
Senses.
Yeah, that's what I am telling. Now we can say, we can say so. Actually, not harmful to say like that, because assume that your eyes are closed, so you can't get the present moment perceptions coming through the eyes. And
yes.
you assume that you are not hearing something and you are not tasting something.
Yes.
And
yes.
So likewise, only faculty then which is capable of producing some perception is the mind. So therefore you can say yes, some stored memories or etc. may appear because of the operation of the mind. We can say so.
Then, if I remain as much as possible with kaya kaya na pasibi, the body in the body, right?
Mm-hmm.
So long as I am there, I know that I am not getting those other ones.
Yes, true.
Because I am not getting that desire,
mm-hmm.
because at the time, it's more dukkha masukha or whatever, or one or the different. For me, it's a neutral. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't a pronounced desire or pronounced aversion, because I'm with the dhatu guna,
mm-hmm.
or the sensation of breath. Now I can't remain there for a long time. It's not mindful enough. So what would you recommend for me? Now the other thing is I also get this dhatu guna not only on the body like that, but sometimes it's more sattu, but it's onto my face too. But all the time I'm moving, the mind goes from the one more predominant to the one from less predominant to the one more predominant.
Mm-hmm.
And because I am not in the position of going into the void yet, or if I go into the void, I tend to fall asleep. I'm trying very hard not to fall asleep.
If mind itself going to voidness, by understanding as we explained today, if understand the impermanent nature and then slowly mind discard all the signs, and if it is coming to the signless concentration, you have to allow that. Expecting that you may fall asleep, if you are avoiding that is not the way. So you may fall asleep, can't help. Slowly your mind get refined so that you are not fall asleep.
Yes, I have been thinking I'm falling asleep, and I think what I have been doing sometimes is latching on to something so that I don't fall asleep.
Yeah, but that is not the solution, because
that's not what I should do, right?
Yeah, that's not what you should do, because then you are hindering the path. Because mind is assume for example, theoretically, if your mind understands the impermanent nature as we discussed today, so slowly your mind can't take perceptions about that phenomena, whatever the phenomena. It is so rapid, so quickly arise and pass away, so it can't take a kind of a sign of that process. So ultimately mind becomes signless. So you have to allow that process to evolve, you have to allow that process to manifest. And ultimately mind becomes signless, but as you have mentioned, because it is so kind of a refined state, we can't maintain it, so probably we might fall asleep. So that is an obstacle at the moment we have, kind of a shortcoming we have. But as we continue this process again and again, so mind becomes more and more refined, our mindfulness becomes sharper and sharper, and ultimately we are able to maintain mindfulness even at the signless concentration. So you should not avoid signless concentration thinking that you fall asleep. Rather, suppose you allow yourself to sleep once you reach there, and later you are trying hard to minimize that sleep. So how are you going to do that? So that is by further improving mindfulness. How about further improving mindfulness while in the walking? Maybe in the other activities. So likewise, you have to give a solution to the mindfulness as a way of improving that. So while being in the signless concentration, you are not falling asleep.
Thank you, Bhante. I don't think I have gone to the signless concentration. Sometimes I may have, but not in my daily, not in my home. If only I'm at a retreat. But I think you're right. I have been...
going into thoughts which are not really, they are also pretty non-discriminate thoughts, because sometimes I can't remember what they are, right? But I'm moving from the dhatu when I don't have the dhatu into some thoughts, right?
Mm-hmm.
But they are not a very strong desire or anything, so I can't remember what I have done. So, okay, but I think I have to be here and practice more, and I have to do more of the walking, because the walking is helping me with my mindfulness more than the sitting right now.
Right, fine. Yeah, that can be. Because, walking helps to further improve mindfulness and refine mindfulness. And that mindfulness helps you to avoid sleepiness, falling asleep, and maintain the say, whiteness and whatever the refined state that your mind reach. Yeah.
Thank you very much, Bhante.
Yeah. Theravan Sarnai.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite you to Debbie for the next question.
Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, now this is a very deep sutta, and of a very high level, but we are at our level. I think occasionally when we are in retreats and all, or sometimes at home even, we can come to a very level of emptiness, which is not, of course, the emptiness that the Buddha is talking of, but we can experience glimpses of it. That would that be right if I said that, Bhante?
Yes. Correct. Because we should not think that is these are extremely far things, because the practitioners temporarily, when they are able to achieve the balance of effort, particularly the balance of effort, then these states may happen. So till you struggle, this may not happen, but till once the fair amount of understanding, the wisdom is available in the mind, and again you are maintaining that in a very delicate manner, the effort is well maintained, then mind can become sort of effortless and signless. Because, effortless in the sense, you are maintaining the necessary equilibrium in the mind, and then it can become signless. And it's a kind of a higher concentration at the beginning. So that is why it's a name, Animitta Samadhi is used in this sermon. Signless concentration. So that is what one may reach at the beginning, because you are going through some vipassana practice that develops fair amount of concentration, and then with that you reach the signless concentration, and you have to maximize it also. You should not be afraid of that concentration, rather you have to maximize it. If you are able to achieve it only for 1 minute, now you have to improve it for 2 minutes. Now we have to improve it for 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 20 minutes, 30 minutes, 45 minutes. So likewise, that signless concentration has to be made available. So you have to familiarize with it. So that is the vipassana practice. So once you are familiarized with it, now you have to work on it. Now then we can understand the last part Buddha mentioned. One recognize, okay, this signless concentration also is conditioned. Now you see the kind of conditioned nature of that. Now you see the disadvantages of that. Now you see the impermanent, unsatisfactory, non-self nature of that, and using which you are slowly, eliminating asavas, eliminating influxes. And that is also, even though this is too technical, this may be something some of you are doing. Actually, we have discussed these things even at the Anapanasati Sutta level. So when we are discussing the Dhammanupassana, and again the last part of the Bojjhanga, how one is developing Bojjhanga to achieve Vijja Vimutti. So we actually have touched these areas. Now Buddha is presenting it in a different way, but the same practice. You allow your mind to little play, and then understand, okay, again mind has grasped something, and now you let go of it. So where it returns to that emptiness.
So there are, you said there were three ways, innocence, yes. Innocence, dukkha, right?
Correct, correct.
Yeah, now what is my other thing is, we do go in, I mean, after meditate, doing the Anapanasati, we do go into a level of concentration. So what is the difference between that concentration and the signless concentration?
Can you repeat the question?
Now, when we go into Anapanasati, after a while we go into a certain concentration. But what is that? What is the difference between that concentration and the signless concentration?
Yeah.
When you say signless concentration, can you give me the difference?
Yeah, so that's a good question. So basically, say without going through any kind of a vipassana practice, one can simply assume that you are simply noticing in breath and out breath, and assume that you are further improving your attention, and you are able to understand the say the beginning, the middle, the end of in breath. So likewise, now you are refining your mindfulness with respect to the breath, and ultimately your breath dissolve or your breath disappear. And once the breath disappear, also you are reaching kind of a concentration. So that is the fourth stage mentioned in the Anapanasati Sutta. Pasambhayam kaya sankaram asasisamiti sikkati. So mind has now the breath has calmed down. Breath has calmed down. So the perception of breath has, we can say, has disappeared. In a way it is also signless, but not really based on vipassana, not really based on wisdom. So typically the signless concentration is, we can say, vimokka mukha, kind of an opening in the mind, because it is fairly supported with wisdom. Again and again mind has understood the impermanent nature. There is no point of grasping, because it can't grasp it, because there is not, I mean, the phenomena are so subtle, so extremely rapidly arising and passing away. So this arising and passing away knowledge is well established in yogi's mind. As a result of that, the signless concentration happens. So therefore we can safely say signless concentration is an outcome because of this vipassana knowledge. But at the very early stages, that what you achieve, you lack with such kind of an understanding.
And it's based on the breath, right?
Because
looking at the breath and the signs and whatever else.
Yes.
And then we develop that concentration. The other concentration is at a higher level.
Level-wise, assume even if you achieve fourth jhana. Fourth jhana is a very higher concentration. So the signless concentration is also, we can say, one can develop to a higher level. But the difference is, even at the fourth jhana, your mind is associating something. Again in the fifth jhana, arupa jhana, your mind is associating something. But in the signless concentration, mind does not associate anything.
But it just develops from those levels anyway, isn't it?
One can, as explained in this sutta. So Buddha has taken the approach of going through the jhanas and then achieving signless. But this is not the only method. So if one is practicing another vipassana techniques, as I explained in the Dhatumanasikara, so there also the signless is available by seeing the impermanent nature. So Buddha has explained that in other suttas. So here actually, of course, explained going through samatha practice and then discarding that concentrated level and achieving the signless.
Yes, but as you said, we can go through the impermanence. You know, when we do the vipassana and we see the anicca.
Yes. Definitely.
Then we can go into that signless concentration, right?
Yeah. But yes. Then, true. Hmm. Actually, it is not we go there. Rather,
yes,
we are simply understanding and we are continuing our observation, understanding that whatever the phenomena that we observe are constantly impermanent. And when that understanding matures, then automatically mind let go of the phenomena and become mindless and become signless. It's a kind of a chitta niyama. It's a kind of a gradual process. It is not that we do. Rather, once the mind achieves that understanding, it's a result.
Yes, but we have to understand it at our level first, you know, Bhante.
Yes, yes. I mean, this theoretical understanding is good.
Yes.
Yeah, theoretical understanding help us to get ourselves quite convinced and again develop some confidence, and we know what's going to happen. So there are no doubts then.
Yes, yes, Bhante, yes, yes. Yeah, it's a very advanced sutta, but it's good for us to contemplate, and that so give it to improve, no, Bhante?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yeah.
So we have to constantly contemplate on this. I think you know, we have to tackle these difficult suttas and understand it and go to the higher level. Otherwise, we'll be stuck in the same level. No, Bhante?
Exactly. Because no, otherwise, sometimes what happens is we even get confused. And some people tell something and we get confused. And when we discuss in many different angles about the Buddha's teaching and we compare this with our practice, then actually we can understand what Buddha wants to tell us.
Exactly, Bhante. Yes, I'm happy you did this. I mean, it's very, you know...
Yeah.
It's like, if you're a beginner and we are all beginners in different ways, I mean, it's a little bit daunting, but I think, I mean, at this stage of my life, I want to have this challenge as Bhante. So, thank you for taking this sutta. I hope we have many more challenging suttas, because that's the only way to get better, Bhante. Thank you.
Yeah, okay. You're welcome.
Thank you. I want to invite Nandana for the next session. Nandana, are you able to unmute?
Can you hear me?
Yes, yes.
Okay, thank you, Bhante. Thank you, Jennifer. Bhante, I think actually I was going to ask the same, at least partly the same question that the earlier person, Chitra Devi, asked. Anyway, I will ask that anyway, just to make sure I understand and confirm it from you. I think from what I understand, that there is a distinction between the concentration that we achieve through samatha, like anapanasati, and you know, just come into a state where your thoughts are absent and you stop feeling your body, and you kind of almost like go into pass away or something like that. That kind of concentration, and then the signless concentration that you explained in this sutta. So I think that distinction, I think, is that right? Am I understanding it right, Bhante?
Yes, yes.
Okay, yeah, so that's it. And then I was listening to the last part of the sutta, when you explained about during the state, you know, when you're at a state where you are in a signless concentration or perception or whatever, then you explained that how we see the mind grasping onto, or mind identifying with kama asava, bhava asava, or avijja asava, or one of those, you know, three kinds of taints. Now they actually appear, and the way we know that the asavas appeared in our minds is through our thoughts, right?
Correct, yes. And here actually the emphasis is given to the perception. So actually this
right.
Yeah,
right.
because
right.
Now these are four parts, we can say various feelings, various perceptions, various mental formations and consciousness. Actually here the prominence is given to the perception, and those perceptions happen due to those three kinds of asavas.
Right.
Yeah.
So I was listening to that part of the sutta, I was wondering, I mean, I'm trying to relate to my meditation experience to see whether I understand this sutta in relation to my practice. So
yeah.
when I do Satipatthana Sutta, Satipatthana practice, if I do Kayana Upasana and then I achieve a certain level of concentration, and maybe do a little bit of Vedana Upasana, and then when you are doing Chittana Upasana meditation, where you are basically focused on your mind, aren't we doing the same thing that this sutta explains?
So actually, in Chittanupassana, so as we explained in Anapanasati Sutta, the 12th step, Vimochayam Chittam Asasisamiti Sikkati. So at that time, also one can achieve signless concentration. Because he has seen the impermanent nature of the body, impermanent nature of various feelings, impermanent nature of various perceptions, and mind has to become free, that is the 12th stage. So why mind becomes free? So maybe due to signless, maybe due to desireless, so maybe due to emptiness. So either case can happen. So we can't definitely say it is only because signless. It depends on the person. So if a person's understanding related to the impermanent is significant, then the signless happen. If his understanding is more into the suffering, then the desireless happen. If it is more into the emptiness, so rather the understanding is non-self, then the emptiness happens. So this is how the explanation is given in the books. So basically, the achievement is one of them. Vimochayam chittam asasissamiti sikkhati indicates that mind become free. So that means there is nothing to associate. That is emptiness, that is signless, that is desireless. So therefore we can say one achieves it, maybe momentarily, but later with practice one has to enhance it. Yes, it is there.
Right. So, okay, I think I kind of understand it, I'm not too sure. Mantivedha, I understand it fully, the three things that you explained. But, I'm trying to kind of relate to my experience in my meditation. I often experience that the last thing that you said about, how there arises the Kamasava, Bhavasava and Avichayasavas.
Right.
Those, perceptions arise very often, and, while you are in that state where you are, your mindfulness is very sharp, you are able to see.
Yes.
And then one thing that I know is that the one way I know that it is, my mindfulness is powerful and that meditation is good, is that although I have these thoughts or perceptions arising, mind is not disturbed or mind is not kind of agitated or anything like that. It is
correct.
Basically like just watching them, pass by and without any sort of movement.
Correct. So that is also, that is also one approach. So you can see, probably you can remember when we were discussing Anapanasati Sutta, the last part, Viveka Nisitang, Viraga Nisitang, Nirodha Nisitang, or Sagga Parinami. The Viraga Nisitang is what you explain. So there are things appear, but you are not bothered about them. And your mind is not lustfully attracted to them. Rather, you are watching it with a dispassion. No harm. So when we are talking signless concentration, as I mentioned, so it is fairly supported with wisdom. So this wisdom has a fair component of dispassion. So dispassion itself is a wisdom. Because mind understood, there is no point of grasping these things. There is no point of grasping because they are inherently impermanent, inconstant. And so likewise, there is a fair amount of understanding is there. One attribute of that is dispassion. Actually, one result we can say is dispassion because understood it is impermanent. So whatever is impermanent will produce suffering, unsatisfactoriness. So no point of grasping. So the desireless dispassion is there. Another attribute. So the same story but looking at from different angles.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Thank you, Bhante.
Yes. Okay.
Okay, thank you. I'd like to invite Priya Dashini to ask the next question.
Did one side my Bhante? Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yeah.
Bhante, when we achieve in our mind, go to that timeless state, then I remember you told that we should try to maintain it. We go it automatically without, I mean, when we try to go there, it won't happen, but it happened automatically.
Mm-hmm.
And then it automatically go out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you mean so it's going out means it's going to either flux again or maybe a proliferation or something like that. Then what we should do is whatever the sign that we are getting at that moment, we just watch that until we come back. Is that what you mean, that we have to try to maintain it?
Yeah, we can say so. That is how we are maximizing it. Basically, one approach, early approach, is that we make and develop some amount of concentration and enhance it. Say, at the moment, assume that you are able to maintain it for 5 minutes. Then as you develop further understanding, further wisdom, so you are able to maintain it for 10 minutes. Further wisdom, further concentration, another 20 minutes. So likewise, the expansion happens. But later, once you are familiarized with it, then you are a little loosening the concentration so that it may even break. So nothing to worry, because your mind is well registered there. And once you understand, okay, it has broken because a thought has come, because a sign appeared, because a sensual thought appeared, there's a sign of my daughter appeared, there's because something like that you recognize. So I'm explaining with gross terms just to understand. So when you understand that, then you drop it, you let it go. And again, you return back to emptiness. In a way, it is Patanisagga Anupassi. You understand, okay, mind has grasped something. Again, some sign occupied the mind. So rather than attaching to it, you simply drop it. So back to emptiness. So this is how actually the weakening of the defilements happen. As we discuss even today, the last part.
When you discuss anusa, you said you have desire to become something.
Mm-hmm.
And often time I have a feeling that I don't want to become something. Like I remember being sick, like I don't want to be sick again, like.
Mm.
Don't want to become something.
Yes, yes. That is also becoming. Also becoming. You don't want to become sick. So this has a desire, isn't it? It has a desire.
Yeah.
So desire to become nobody. I mean, sometimes actually these are very wonderful targets, and we have to carefully handle them. Actually, it is true, it is a good desire that I don't want to become somebody, and let me kind of a normal person. It's actually reduce our too much aggressive kind of a desires. And slowly we can even understand there is a kind of a tendency, desire in me, I want to become nobody. So that is also want to being somebody. And therefore, there is no point of making I at any place.
Bhante, I have another question. I have heard many times you mention that paratto dharma, being observer and observe.
Yes.
So, when I do breathing meditation, anapanasati, I don't know if I'm doing. I'm not doing it purposely. This is what happens when I pay attention to my breath. I have a perception of some person like me. There's no body. There's nothing. But in one side there is a sign of me, and in front of me They are a fair facial, but there's no nose or nothing. There no person, nothing,
mm-hmm.
but just the sensation.
Mm-hmm.
But it's in front of me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'm observing it, and I'm watching it, but I don't know if that is what you call Parasurabrahma.
Not really. Actually, it's not that the difficult thing. Suppose you allow your body to walk and you are simply looking at it as a third person, as a separate person, not that I am walking. So you may achieve it even at the early stages of your practice. Once you are able to recognize this balance effort, so rather than you involve too much and do the meditation, you maintain a well-balanced attitude and you allow the body to walk naturally, with natural speed, and you watch it. And similarly, you allow the body to breathe naturally and you watch it. Actually, it may deepen, that understanding actually deepens. Parato Balma, the person of the third person's view, may improve, but you can start like that. Okay. Okay. Okay, then we actually have reached our end of program, so we'll share merits and close the program. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe deva anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe bhuta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Ettavata ca amhehi sambatam punya sampadam sabbe satta anumodantu sabba sampatti siddhiya. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu sasanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu desanam. Akasattha ca bummattha devanaga mahiddika punyantam anumoditva chiram rakkhantu mam param. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Idam vo ñātīnaṃ hotu sukhitā huntu ñātayo. Imina punya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina punya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Imina punya kammena māme bāla samāgamo. Satam samāgamo hotu yāva nibbāna pattiyā. Sādhu, sādhu, sādhu.